first information of this bomb that would blow up Nagasaki. This speeded up the Soviet development of the bomb by about 5 years.
The Wunderkind spy. It was very dangerous that the Americans had a monopoly of this weapon.
The world has come extremely close to real, actual, total disaster.
What made you do it?
Welcome back to Guerrilla Radio. Well, among those that know, right now is the most dangerous moment the world has ever known, more than Ronald Reagan's reign of error, where the pitch of Western belligerence against the Soviet Union pinned the needle. The current slide into the big muddy of nuclear Armageddon is beginning to seem a grotesque inevitability. But there was a precedent matching the horror of our moment. John Kennedy's retreat from the brink during the Cuban Missile Crisis is a fragile beacon of hope for our survival. And fittingly, it is being seized upon by JFK's nephew, Robert F. Kennedy Jr., in his bid for the Democratic Party nomination for president. Jim Kavanaugh is a former college professor, now publishing political and social analysis as the polemicist on Substack and making videos on the same topics at Rumble. His articles appear online at, among other places, the Grenville Post and Counterpunch.org, where his recent article, RFK Jr.'s Chances, appears. Welcome to the program, Jim.
Thanks for having me, Chris.
Well, it's my great pleasure. Of course, now, Jim, your article isn't a blanket endorsement of RFK's run by any means, and your criticisms are too poignant and broadly shared, I believe, as it's a peace candidate that we're hoping for. What's Kennedy's position on the apparently open-ended U.S. support of Zelensky and continuation of the war in Ukraine?
Well, you know, he's made very good remarks about that, in the sense that he's saying, which is crucial, American policymakers and American public have to be able to see things from the other side's point of view. And, you know, he's endorsed the idea that the United States and NATO have pushed themselves on to the borders of Russia, and that Russia has a legitimate security interest and a legitimately security fear that NATO and the United States have not taken account of. And the United States has just bulldozed its way to the borders of Russia as it's bulldozed its way. I mean, he said it in nice ways, clear ways, around the world. It thinks we can put military bases wherever we want, and whatever other countries' security interests just don't count. So he's made that point. I mean, he's still on the line that, you know, Russia was a Putin is a nasty guy, and Russia was this is a mad, aggressive attack on Ukraine, which the logic of that is another story, but that there's a reason the people can have that position. But, you know, he's taken reasonable positions on this, much more reasonable than the foreign policy apparatus and the Biden administration. And really, he's it's not just about Ukraine. As I say, he's talked about, you know, the way in which the United States assumes its right to go around the world building military bases everywhere without taking account of other countries' real interests. And I think that's very good. And, as you know, you evoked his uncles and the Cuban Missile Crisis. And I just want to say, one of the things I said in my article was, this is worse than the Cuban Missile Crisis. First of all, the major powers here are in ongoing combat at this time. There are American forces and Western NATO forces in Ukraine. They're running the war, first of all, from a command and control point of view. And secondly, there are real American and NATO soldiers in Ukraine and directing the fight through intelligence and command and control. Secondly, the president now is Joe Biden, not John Kennedy. And I mean, that's a whole different level of competence. And thirdly, and really the most important thing, is we have a neocon foreign policy establishment that really believes, you know, as I say, they party like it's 1999 still. That is, they believe the United States can threaten everybody. They can stop, the United States can start the war when it wants and stop the war when it wants. And Russia is just, you know, they're going to be afraid of us. They believe in the fear and the weakness of Russia, which was reasonable, you know, from 1990 to 2015, 16, perhaps. But that is no longer the case. And I don't think they're taking account of this. Russia is not the Russia of 1990s. Russia is a powerful country, and they respect the damage we can do. but they're not going to be backed off by some kind of escalation dominance. And they can't be, you know, talked around with some kind of five-dimensional talk-a-talk that will not get them what they want. They've Putin spent 9 years not acting in a way that a lot of people in Russia and in the Donbass and in eastern Ukraine were asking him to do. And it was only because negotiations failed that we're at this stage. And they've actually failed three times, even since then. So this is not going to be – the neocons think they can control everything here. And they think Russia is kind of a non-entity at the end of the game that will do what they want in response to their cues. That's not necessarily the case. This makes it extremely, extremely dangerous.
Yeah, I watched the RFK Jr.'s two-plus-hour speech when he was announcing his throwing his hat into the presidential ring. And it was a great speech, and some of it was really uplifting and inspirational. But when it came to the Ukraine part, I remember feeling kind of cringy about some of the things that Kennedy was saying about that war and talking about his own son going and being mercenary in it, essentially, the way I read it. But beyond Ukraine, though, does Kennedy seem to you to be prepared to talk about the bigger issue of American militarism writ large and this the idea that you talk about since 1999? Well, since 1999, before that too, but especially since 1999, it's been America and the NATO allies have been in a state of perpetual war all over the world, and this is these wars. As much as any political motivation is financial. Is he willing to address those issues?
Well, this is an unknown. And look, I agree with you. Kennedy's made some good noises, but I think fundamentally at the end of the day, I think there's a kind of illusion and mythology that, oh, everything was okay in the day of his uncle and his father. You know, the America really did have a humanitarian mission. He's developed a line that we went in there for humanitarian reasons, but now it's become a geopolitical thing. We're out to get Russia. We never went in there for humanitarian reasons. You know, all the humanitarian reasons since 1945 have been phony, and that's something which I think as you say, I'm not endorsing Robert Kennedy. I have a lot of respect for him in a lot of ways, but you know, I do think at the end of the day, he's someone who's enracinated, who's got his roots deeply in a kind of mythology of American virtue, et cetera, and we're the good guys in the world. And I'm not suggesting that we should think, we may hope, but I'm not suggesting that we should think that he's going to do away with that. You know, he said some good things about that. But again, we've seen this before, and you know, as a leftist and a socialist and a Marxist, I wouldn't put, you know, bet the mortgage on it or put my, he's not an anti-imperialist and he's not a leftist. And he says that he's an old school Democrat. He's the good old Democrat of his father and uncle's days, as opposed to the bad old Democrat of the neoliberal Clinton Biden days. And, you know, that's not really an anti-imperialist or anti-capitalist, or, you know, it doesn't have that deep a critique of the American project and of American society and the American project in the world. So I wouldn't, you know, I as you say, I'm not telling anybody to vote for him. I'm telling anybody to vote for anybody. But this is, it's interesting that he's, you know, we are in a situation that's so bad in terms of the level of discourse we have. You know, Mike Pence just came out and said, we're going to have attack Russia if they blow up this nuclear power plant, which everybody thinks, I mean, this is just so phony. But, you know, and to have someone of Kennedy's stature in terms of, the history and mythology of American politics, speaking with any kind of opposition to what is the neocon project in Ukraine is a good thing. And it'll create a better debate in the next year and a half, giving over the presidential season. But I'm not telling anybody Robert Kennedy is going to, be an agent to undermine or overthrow American imperialism.
Well, as well as presenting himself as Democrat classic flavor, I haven't seen it. Maybe he has now, but I haven't seen him take the many opportunities he's been given to criticize Biden. He says, "Oh, Biden's a great friend of my family, et cetera, et cetera."
Yeah, no, he hasn't said anything specifically pointed at Biden. That's true. I was surprised a little bit by the fact that he did not say he would endorse Biden if Biden was the nominee. I think he probably will, you know, and I think that would be the test. But the more interesting thing for me, you know, I mean, is he's taken a strong enough stance that is implicitly but clearly opposed to the Biden administration's policies in Ukraine in some way. he's taken a strong enough stance with that. And the situation in the United States and the world is so likely to change and to have so much crap hit the fan. I don't know what my language can be like on this broadcast, but, you know, over the next 16 months, that, again, his presence and his discourse in the race are something that's going to open up, you know, a debate, I think, in a way that Biden would prefer not to have opened up. But that's not just going to be because Kennedy's there. It's going to be because things are going to happen. And the Biden camp can't escape those things and can't control them. And Kennedy has put himself in because I think he understands and foresees that possibilities are going to open up that the Biden camp can't control. So we'll see what happens. It's going to make for an interesting his presence, I think, is something that discombobulates the Democrats and the whole presidential race in an interesting way.
Well, the fact that Biden is so intimately intertwined with Ukraine and was so in the previous when he was the vice president, and the level of corruption that his son Hunter represents and he's connected to him, it seems it's pretty obvious, as well as Biden's health and mental state, the questions surrounding that. It seems that it isn't it a duty now of Kennedy and anybody really in America to start questioning the effectiveness or sanity even of the executive branch right now.
Well, I think the smart thing to do, frankly, you know, is not to go at that directly, to state your case in a way that clearly opposes and, you know, gives a rational alternative. And you got to let Biden is going to destroy himself. I mean, he is destroying. It's going to be very hard for them to hide Biden's decline, his mental decline. OK, and it's going to be very hard, impossible to stop the results and the implications of the failure of the American policy in Ukraine and the failure of the Zelensky regime. And the military failure of the huge amounts of weapons and money that's been put into that, you know, have gotten nowhere. And you can just say that over and over again without saying, oh, Joe Biden has dementia. You don't have to say that. You just point to what's going on. And the Biden camp is going to have to try and deal with the consequences of all of this and have to try and put Biden up front and have him explain things. It's not going to be possible. I don't think Joe Biden, whoever's the nominee, I don't think Joe Biden is going to be the nominee in 2024. I don't think they can prop him up enough, given the crap that's going to hit the fan, both in terms of Ukraine, in terms of Joe Biden's mental state, in terms of actually what's going to happen in Ukraine, which is going to be a disaster for the U.S. and for NATO and for the whole discourse that they've been promoting, in terms of the economic situation. We may face a banking crisis again, et cetera. Things are going to happen in the world that, you know, spin out of control, and Joe Biden is not going to have the capacity of standing up and sounding like he's in control of those things. So I really don't think Joe Biden's going to be the nominee in 2024, and that's what makes it interesting. At that point, who do they got?
And that's not to mention the global abandonment of the U.S. dollar as the fiat currency. Does that mean, though, that if, and I agree with you, that I can't imagine Biden surviving until another year and a half. Does that automatically mean Kamala Harris is going to be the Democrats' choice?
Well, this is what I'm saying. This is whatever happens, you know, they're going to try to keep Biden propped up. And if they can, they will until November 2024. But I don't think they will be able to. And if they can't, what are they going to do? They don't. Nobody wants Kamala Harris to become the president. If Biden were forced to step down, in order for the Democrats' plan B to have a plan B that's plausible, I mean, it's not Kamala Harris. She's got the worst ratings of anybody, and nobody trusts her to run the country, and she would never win an election. They're going to try and put Gavin Newsom in there. That's their, I think, someone else said to me, Chris Whitmer, that's a possibility too. But I think they're priming and primping Gavin Newsom to come in. But that's a very difficult, complicated thing to do because Kamala Harris is the vice president. You'd have to get her to step down as vice president, you know, in some kind of persuasively voluntary way, and then appoint Gavin Newsom as vice president and then have Joe Biden step down. It's a very complicated situation the Democrats are in to try and cope with the fact if they need to get rid of Biden, if they can't do anything about Biden. And once you do that, once there's any way that once Biden's out, no matter what they try to do, it opens up the game in a way they cannot control. And in that game, Kennedy has a strong position. Nobody has a stronger position, I would say. And they're going to be able to say to themselves, and he's going to be able to say to them, look, I'm not a leftist. I'm not an anti-imperialist. You know, I'm a reformer, you know, and I'm the person and the only one of them. You know, this is like Obama 2.0, the only one who can give some kind of credibility, restore some kind of credibility and appeal to the American project internationally. You know, Kamala Harris can't do that. Pete Buttigieg can't do it. Gavin Newsom really can't do it in the same way that Kennedy could. So that's going to make him, I think, situations going to occur that are going to force the Democratic Party to take him more seriously.
And Newsom is the current governor of California. Well, if you've just tuned in, you're listening to Guerrilla Radio. I'm speaking today with Jim Kavanaugh. Jim is a former college professor, now publishing political and social analysis as The Polemicist on Substack and making videos on the same topics at Rumble. His articles appear online at the Grenville Post and counterpunch.org, among other places. It was at Counterpunch that I found his recent article, RFK Jr.'s Chances. So, Jim, Kennedy would fight to maintain credibility, at least credibility in those circles that would think that he's a safe pair of hands to go in. He moved a long way in that direction recently by reversing his support of Pink Floyd frontman Roger Waters and his position on Israel, Palestine generally, looking at what's happening in Palestine as we speak right now. What's your thinking on Kennedy and the Palestine issue?
Well, if you read my article, you'll see I'm ruthless with him about that. He parroted the silliest establishment talking points. He clearly positions himself within traditional, conventional Zionist narrative, which is nonsense. And, you know, it's ironic, as I said about the Roger Waters incident, that, you know, what the Zionists did to Roger Waters with the anti-Semitism epithet, you know, to shut up talking about what's a taboo subject is exactly the same thing that they do to RFK Jr. with the anti-vaxxer epithet, to shut him up from talking about a taboo subject. And the fact that Kennedy doesn't see that and went along with that, went along and caved in to that kind of strategy is terrible. But his position on Palestine and Israel and Zionism that he elaborated in that Glenn Greenwald interview is terrible. Look, this is, and we see this, what's happening right now in Jenin, this is colonialism. This is settler colonialism. This is intrinsically apartheid because you cannot have colonialism without establishing a regime of fundamental inequality for the indigenous population and the settlers versus the settlers. And this is what's going on. This is the fundamental aspect of Zionism and of Israel, and you can see it. Israel has the right to undergo any kind of military activity it wants against the Palestinians. Israel is security, which means the security of the Jewish supremacist state, which is what the Israeli Human Rights Organization calls it, the Jewish supremacist. It's a regime of Jewish supremacy from the river to the sea, That's what it is. This is a Jewish supremacist state in which those who are not Jews are second-class citizens, and they have to maintain that situation. To do that requires, if you're ruling over the majority of the population, which you are, majority of the population under the control of this Israel is not Jewish, and they have to continually try and subjugate or expel or eliminate as many as they can. And that's there. They explicitly say that. And nobody who has a kind of a pretense of being an honest person of anti-colonialist thought, you know, this is like supporting, this is Jim Crow in the Middle East. You know, you can't support Jim Crow and claim to be an anti-racist. You can't support Israel and claim to be an anti-colonialist.
Yeah, you say that Kennedy's position, he's repeating, quote, shallow shibboleths.
Yeah, I mean, and he went along with that rabbi in New York who's really a nasty character. And he's coming across and successfully as the honest and intelligent and open-minded candidate. He's too smart not to understand how bad these shallow shibboleths are. Well, he said the Palestinians walked away from in 1947 and in 2001. That's nonsense. I mean, they were driven out. You know, you can't ignore and pretend you don't understand that this is colonialism. And you can't, you know, you're going to be disingenuous in that way. Then you're giving up your honesty. You're giving up your premise of honesty. As I said, let's ask him one simple question. Not you support Israel, Israel, right, blah, blah. Does Israel have nuclear weapons? If he's got to answer that question honestly. He knows the answer to that question. And I don't think he'd answer it honestly. and because he can't. So that's the kind of thing that really is, you know, this is something that people like, you know, anti-Zionists, anti-imperialists, people who oppose colonialism and think that's a deal breaker, you know, are going to, and he a lot of leftists who initially thought he was, were surprised by what he said to Glenn Greenwald. I'm not surprised. There's no politician in the United States who's not a Zionist, no major politician. And I don't think anybody should have expected him to be anything but a Zionist, and I don't think he's made clear he's not. May he change that? I know people, comrades of mine, friend, oh, maybe we get him a change. I kind of doubt that. So, you know, look, I have respect for Kennedy because I had a friendly conversation or communication with him via email. I wrote an article against vaccine mandates, which he read and liked, and I have a friend, close friend, who is a friend of his. So, you know, I have some respect for him, but I don't have any illusion about it didn't surprise me at all what his position on Israel and Palestine, and I don't think it's going to change.
Well, I would argue that it's more than colonialism and more than Jim Crow, certainly. It's more like ethnic cleansing, and especially when, as you quote in your article, the what's being used as a slogan within Israel right now is Finish 48, which is the, you know, a reference to the ethnic cleansing of the Palestinian population, the indigenous population there. Well, the one area where Kennedy picked up a lot of fans, I would say, was his anti-vax stance and going against the orthodoxy of the moment. But when you mentioned an Obama 2.0, what we've seen is that as sheepdogging, as it's been referred to, with the Clintons and Obama and Bernie Sanders and the squad. But with Kennedy, even something as simple as universal health care, something we're used to in Canada, although it's under attack as well, he can't seem to bring himself even that far.
Yes, as I said, look, for me, this is one of these issues. This no excuse for an American politician who claims to be progressive not to support universal single-payer health care. There's just no excuse for it. This is horrendous what happens to people in this country. I saw this tweet yesterday. A guy said, my wife got cancer, and in an instant, 20 years of savings was wiped out. And we had insurance. And all of us, you know, we did everything right. We went to college. We had bought a house. All of it was wiped out by medical debt. You know, and this is impossible. You cannot have, there's no Democratic politician, Republican politician, you got to fight for universal single-payer health care. And if you don't, it's not because it's politically difficult, which is Kennedy's line. It's only politically difficult because the Democratic Party opposes it. There's no possibility that the Democrats would lose an election if they fought for the internet, for single-payer universal health care. It is already a popular. The people want it. All the polls show that everybody wants it. And this is what I say to Kennedy. If you were willing to fight correctly against establishment on vaccine credulity, I'm not saying he's an anti-vaxxer, that's a phony crime. He's in favor of real scientific discussions. He's against vaccine credulity and vaccine quasi-religious harmless magic bullet vaccine ideology. And that was harder to fight against, and it still is harder to fight against than fighting against the insurance companies, the health insurance companies, and fighting for single payer health insurance. That the road to that is open. If the Democratic Party fought for it, if the Democratic president imposed the discipline of the party and their allied media to fight for single payer universal coverage health care, we would have it. The Republicans couldn't stop it. But the fact is, it's not the Republicans who've stopped it. It's the Democratic Party who has opposed it and prevented it from happening. Time and again, that's the case with Obama in 2009. And it was what the Democratic Party did in the election of 2016 in the primary season. They spent the whole time trashing Medicare for All, which they all had claimed 2 years before to be in favor of. So this is something that Kennedy, he could be the guy to do this. But
it's a little
difficult politically. Baloney.
Well, you say that it could be his winning strategy, and you say get him to ask this question of his opponents: name the child whose parents should be afraid to take her to the doctor because they can't afford it for a single day for the lack of a single nickel. And if you don't name your own child, then sit right the fuck down.
Absolutely, that's a winning. There's no answer to that, and there's 99% of the people in the country will say you're absolutely right. This is what they all get you on, how you're going to pay for it nonsense, which again, we'll go back to that. You know, that's you pay for you pay for everything else. But you got to answer. You got to be willing to answer those questions and to fight. And if you will, you'll win. That's nobody can defend this system in which whose child can't go to the doctor.
Yeah. Well, while billions. Well, hundreds of billions are going to Ukraine right now that they can't, you know. Yeah, and you also write about something I'd never really thought about, families having to choose which member, talk about Julia's choice, which member of their family can get treatment. Because, you know, we see cancer is endemic now, and now vaccine injury adding to that. You know, choose which member of your family can get medical treatment if you can't afford it all. It's gruesome. Jim, we're fast out of time. You finished your article, though. You show a Economist YouGov poll that with Kennedy, Biden, and Trump, and Kennedy comes out with the strongest numbers.
Yeah, his favorability ratings are much better than either Biden or Trump. Look, they did. I forget, it was Harvard, and someone did a head-to-head poll with Trump and Biden, and Trump defeated Biden. If they do a head-to-head poll with Trump and RFK Jr., and RFK Jr. defeats Trump, what can the Democrats say? You know, you want to defeat Trump? You know, most Democrats don't want Biden to run again. This is the box they're in. They have to pretend that it's okay.
Well, I think right now a cabbage could defeat Biden, and a year from now, I think that's going to be obvious to everyone. Jim, thanks a lot for coming on. Can you direct our listeners to how they can find you and find more of your work?
Yes, I'm on the Substack. Jim Cavan is the polemicist Substack at Twitter @the_polemicist. And you know, if you subscribe to my Substack, you'll find everything. You can read everything for free. I have this Rumble channel now, which I'm starting to do short videos for.
Well, and Jim's article is RFK Jr.'s Chances. You can find that at counterpunch.org. And we could talk a lot about Counterpunch, too, I think.
Yeah, that's enough.
violence. Well, thanks again, Jim, for coming on. And thanks, too, to Dave Willendorf. And look out for his movie. It'll be coming later in the summer, A Compassionate Spy. Thanks again, Jim.
Thank you very much for having me, Chris.
Well, I gotta think that we're not alone.
I'm sitting in my house watching all this happen, and I've arrived to a point where I just can't keep my mouth shut anymore.
Guerrilla Radio, you're not alone.